Good morning, Your Honors. It may have pleased the court. Michael B. Hazard, on behalf of Petitioner Core Communications, Inc., I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Statutory authority, a congressional delegation, is a necessary antecedent to action by any administrative agency, including the FCC. Administrative agencies may issue regulations only pursuant to their delegated authority, to authority delegated them by Congress. This court's review of FCC action is anchored to Congress's statutes in what this court and other courts have termed as the familiar Chevron standard. First, if the statute unambiguously controls the precise question of issue, then the court need go no further. Second, where the agency exercises delegated authority to resolve statutory ambiguity.
Excuse me, I thought this was a mandamus petition.
It is, sir.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're beyond this issue you're now raising. Isn't the question now whether we should grant mandamus for the agency's failure to resolve the issue that we dealt with years ago under Chevron?
Yes, it is, Your Honor, but what is unique and extraordinary, truly extraordinary about this case, is there is no statutory predicate for the agency's action. In the WorldCom case that goes back to May of 2002, the court found that the statutory basis asserted by the agency was precluded.
Right. I have two fact questions that I'm unclear of, and I think you could help. One is that the FCC argues, well, don't worry about it, wait till the forbearance petition is resolved, and to which you respond that you won't get the, you say in your brief, without the determination that the existing regime is ultra-virus, CORE cannot obtain relief to make itself whole. What kind of relief could you get if we were to hold, imagine we vacated immediately the compensation rule. What kind of relief would you get?
If you vacated the compensation rule immediately, it would be as if it never existed, and we would then be able to pursue our contractual remedies under our agreements that we have pursuant to the Communications Act with the Bell operating companies.
So I've forgotten about that. So there are contractual agreements which these interim rules essentially put on hold or put off or invalidate.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I see.
And an important thing here is that
if you prevail on the forbearance issue, wouldn't you be able to pursue those as well? What does the mandamus get you that the later action wouldn't get you if you win on both?
Forbearance would require the agency to respond to this court's mandate and come forward and articulate the statutory
basis. Forbearance is only prospective, is that right?
Excuse me, I apologize. Forbearance would only give us prospective relief. A mandamus that required the agency to come forward and articulate, you know, that it is in Congress's orbit, that it is applying a provision of the statute in issuing its otherwise untethered rules, would give us relief back to.
Only if that authority was not correct.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct, Your Honor.
Let me ask you one other thing from the brief. That was actually quite helpful. The other one is starting at page 10. You talk about something that the FCC has subtly revealed to Congress. The subtlety may be beyond me. So
yes, Your Honor, in response to various inquiries from Congress that the agency was not having a sufficiently open interexchange with the bodies that it regulates, Chairman Martin came forward and said, what I will do is I will place all orders under commission consideration on a publicly filed list.
And that's what you have in Appendix A.
That's correct.
So then you say on the next page of the brief that there is something on the docket that deals only with intercarrier compensation for ISP-bound traffic.
Yes, the FCC.
And then you circle that at page, looks like page 7, page 4 of 8 of Appendix A, is that right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, how do we know that that's for ISP-bound traffic only?
The docket references 9968, uh-huh. which is called intercarrier compensation for ISP-bound traffic.
Oh, well,
now, I certainly don't know what the contents of that order
right.
is.
Okay.
I can't pretend to. But what I can tell you.
Well, maybe opposing counsel can enlighten us.
Correct. But this goes back to we have this agency operating outside of any stated congressional authority. As Judge Tatel stated, there very well may be congressional authority for what the agency does has done. We disagree with that. Right. But we've never had the opportunity to get a Chevron analysis of the rules that the agency promulgated over 7 years ago.
Right, and that's what would happen if the agency issues the regulation we've directed them to issue. Not the regulation, the explanation, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But the agency has come forward multiple times and in multiple different ways to inform the court that it was on the cusp of resolving these issues. In 2003, when asked directly by Judge Williams whether there was a response to the mandate, FCC counsel said, we are vigorously working on it. And the next year, in response to our initial...
Everything's relative, isn't it?
Well, when this case started, Your Honor, in 1999 with a declaratory ruling, I believe Judge Griffiths was working for the Senate. Bill Clinton was president.
That's really a long time.
Well,
you can bring this up.
Some of your law clips.
You can bring this up to Friday night. At least I received a document saying that they're on the cusp again.
Right.
No, Your Honor, what they said is this. What they suggest is that they need further additional delay. Yeah. And we've had 7 years. Of further additional delay.
Help me go back to your answer to Judge Garland's question about the contractual remedies that are available to you. I didn't help me understand that.
Under the Communications Act, Sections 251 and 252, new entrants like my client Core Communications enters into arrangements, regulatory contracts with incumbent local exchange companies mm-hmm. like Verizon or AT&T or some others. And the parameters of those agreements are set forth in the statute, including, as Commissioner Furchtgott-Roth noted, reciprocal compensation. And as he said, reciprocal compensation is an obscure and tedious topic, but it's not one that Congress overlooked. He went further and said, Congress goes into more detail on reciprocal compensation regulations than almost any other aspect of the commercial arrangement mandated between ILEX and CLEX. Now, we had agreements in place that reflected the rules at the time, and those agreements were abrogated by the FCC's ISP remand order.
I guess we don't actually know whether you would get retroactive relief, whether under contract vacating this rule would give you retroactive relief or not, right?
That's correct, but I think what we do know is that the status quo ante regulations would apply. And to the extent that we would be entitled to whatever those status quo ante regulations provided CORE under its contract with Verizon. And there's an important related part that Commissioner Furchtgott-Roth went into great detail in, that at the time, the Act and the existing rules, the state commissions set the rates for the inter-exchange of this LEC-to-LEC traffic. What the FCC did, without any statutory basis, what Furchtgott-Roth called a slap-together judicial analysis that reallocates Congress's directive, is what Commissioner Furchtgott-Roth said. We're now under a federal regime with capped rates, a very different thing than what the FCC first promulgated, you know, based on the statutory authority granted by Congress. So for all these reasons, we feel strongly that at this time, mandamus is warranted. And I'd just like to quickly address Friday's filing, which I received Saturday morning. The FCC invites additional significant delay, not because intercarrier compensation reform is so complex, but we're going to take this complex intercarrier compensation reform that precludes us from addressing the piecemeal regulation from 2001, and we're going to layer on top of that universal service reform, which the agency now says is urgently needed. Well, in 2005, they said that intercarrier compensation reform was urgently needed. And if passed as prologue, are we expected to wait an additional 7 years? But, and I'm running short on time here, but there's another point here. The day before, there was a press release associated with the universal service item. It doesn't mention intercarrier compensation. The day before, they issued the universal service order. over 100 pages, several hundred footnotes, the word ISP does not appear in that order. The word reciprocal compensation does not appear in that order. The word intercarrier compensation does not appear in that order. Any reference to WorldCom VFCC doesn't appear in that order.
You haven't submitted that to us, have you?
My little diatribe against the...
Yeah, no, the document you're talking about.
I believe counsel did. Counsel for the FCC did. I just received an electronic copy that isn't even on FCC letterhead.
You're talking about their Rule 20HA submission.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Oh, I see. That has all those footnotes in it?
I have a copy of it here.
Okay.
I can get the precise number.
No, I don't need that.
Just be clear.
Don't worry.
But under this court's jurisprudence, the way I read your cases, when the agency offers only further significant delay, mandamus grants. And in fact, in radio, television, news directors, the court went so far as to say when the agency acts like this, mandamus is preordained.
Can I just ask a timing question? So the first order that we ruled, that we overruled in Bell, was from 1996?
In 1996, the subject matter of this case was not reviewed, but in 1999, they issued a declaratory ruling, a separate declaratory ruling, and that was vacated in Bell Atlantic.
So I'm just trying to recall. In 1996, the FCC construed the reciprocal compensation arrangements to apply only to local traffic, right?
That's correct. They had a local long-distance dichotomy.
Right. And was that was overruled in Bell, right?
No, Your Honor. Right. In 1996, they had this local long-distance dichotomy.
Right, right.
Subsequent to that issuance, the Bell operating companies, just to be perfectly frank here, started saying, "Gosh, these CLECs are, signing up ISPs."
That didn't relate directly to dial-up to the ISP.
No, it was the 1999 declaratory ruling where for the first time the FCC created a new category.
Now, the contracts that you're talking about, when were they entered into?
They were entered into in the late 90s, prior to the ISP remand order.
But what was going on then? What was just reciprocal compensation the rule then, or what was
reciprocal compensation was the rule then, Your Honor? And there was a separate regime for access charges.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joseph Palmore. I'm here on behalf of the FCC. Mandamus is not warranted in this case because there has been no unreasonable delay in light of all the relevant.
Why does it take 7 years to answer this very simple question, which is, what is the legal basis for treating ISP calls differently? I mean, it's not like most of our mandamus cases where the charge to the agency is extremely complex. This is just a straightforward question. What's the legal authority for treating ISP differently?
Well, this question is a small and diminishing question that's part of a larger cluster of questions, which involves how should telecommunications carriers be compensated when more than one collaborates on a call.
Wouldn't it help the Commission to have an answer to this question as it considers a more comprehensive question?
No, I don't think it would, because what the Commission has said is that the problem with the current regime is that the Commission has a patchwork of different regulatory regimes.
My question, if there's no legal basis for treating ISP calls differently, then that takes one of the options the Commission is considering off the table.
This question of compensation for traffic to dial-up internet service providers is just one of many related issues that the Commission intends to address in a comprehensive order.
But this issue will be addressed in the comprehensive order, right?
Absolutely.
So wouldn't the Commission like to know whether there's a legal basis for treating it separately now? Wouldn't that help the Commission?
No, Your Honor, because there could be spillover effect. Any way that the Commission decides this question, there could be spillover effect for other kinds of traffic, for other aspects of this current patchwork.
Would it be helpful to know that now? That's my only question.
It would be helpful for what the Commission wants to do is develop a comprehensive set of rules that deals with all this traffic at the same time.
And you also said it's diminishing. That's because of broadband, right?
Correct.
So why is that relevant to the issue before us today?
I think because what
I mean, there's still ISP only traffic, correct?
There is still ISP only traffic.
So the issue is unresolved. There's still traffic covered by it. Yes, it may be less because of broadband, but why does that make a difference in terms of the issue before this court today?
because that goes to the commission's policy judgment and its docket management discretion. So the evaluating a claim of unreasonable delay is not a mechanical exercise in time management. The court looks at all the relevant circumstances, and here what the court has to consider is the fact that the commission has indicated that it does intend to address this remand as part of its larger proceeding.
I don't understand. These people are not being paid during all these 9 years.
They have
except
been paid
under the interim rules.
Correct.
Right. And we've said that there's no statutory basis so far that you've put forward. All we're asking you to tell us is what the statutory basis is. You've tried twice, failed both times. Now, this means that during this entire 9 years, it may turn out that there was no basis during that entire 9 years. You may want a comprehensive scheme, but you have some plaintiffs here who are being injured for 9 years. Now, I really don't understand why you just can't give the reason. No one's telling you to put into effect a particular rule or not a rule. The only thing that was requested in the last remand was to state the basis for the rule.
That's correct, and the commission does intend to address the WorldCom remand.
I know, but you've been telling us this. So as they very helpfully provided in the blue brief, that's what you told us in August of 2004. That's what you told us in March of 2005, that you intended to comprehensively do these things.
Absolutely, and the commission has been working on it since that time. The court denied CORE's last mandamus petition after the commission brought to the court's attention the fact that it intended to address the WorldCom remand as part of this larger proceeding.
How many years ago was that?
That was in 2005.
Right.
There was further comment sought on major proposals that were put forward in 2006 and 2007, which covered all manner of intercarrier compensation, including ISP-bound traffic. Just last week, there was conversation about the 28J letter that we submitted.
Would we have received this letter on Friday night were it not for the fact that we were hearing the argument on Monday morning?
The letter was keyed off of an order that was adopted by the commission on Thursday, which capped which provided an interim cap for payments from the Universal Service Fund. There's a mathematical relationship between payments from the Universal Service Fund on the one hand and intercarrier compensation on the other. It's kind of like a seesaw. If intercarrier compensation goes down, payments from the Universal Service Fund go up. So what the Wireline Competition Bureau said in that statement that we provided to the court on Friday is that the commission, now that this interim cap is in place, the commission intends to move forward expeditiously
In our original order in this case, in WorldCom, we remanded without vacating.
That's correct.
Right? In the previous order, in Bell, we just vacated, right? Bell Atlantic.
That's correct.
There's nothing stopping us from simply vacating in WorldCom other than our belief that we would hear expeditiously from you with respect to your reasoning. In fact, the APA, some members of this court argue, would have required us to vacate. So if we were only to do now what we certainly could have done then, what's the argument against doing that?
The argument against doing that is that would deprive the commission of its ability to deal with this in a comprehensive manner. I would refer the court to its decision in Action on Smoking and Health, which we describe in our brief.
Was there a previous mandamus order? Was there a previous court decision in that case?
There was no previous court decision in that case, but there was a regulatory deadline that the agency had missed.
Yeah, that's why that case is very different. There was no previous. In fact, here you have two.
Right, but there was a regulatory deadline that had been missed.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
One of your arguments, one of the commission's arguments for denying mandamus relief here is the forbearance petition that's pending to be heard here in the fall, right?
Correct. Well, we suggest deferring consideration until after that's decided.
Yeah. What's your reaction to what Mr. Hazard said about the difference between those two from the CORE's perspective? That is that with the forbearance petition, even if it wins, succeeds, it can't get the relief it can get were we to grant mandamus here, get a commission decision, ultimately find it unsupported by the law and vacate.
I think that Mr. Hazard has touched on what would be a very complex question of retroactivity, which I can't really speak to. The commission would have to decide.
Face at all with the forbearance petition, correct?
It is correct that forbearance is
a
forward-looking remedy.
Here they've got an argument that they could get relief retroactively.
They have an argument. Okay. That's correct.
Now, if you were right about forbearance petition, Well, let me ask you this. Suppose there were no forbearance petition pending. Would you still argue that we should deny mandamus because they always have the forbearance petition option?
No, I wouldn't, Your Honor.
Why? The question under mandamus is whether there's an adequate alternative remedy. So why wouldn't the commission take that position?
Well, Your Honor, the commission recognizes that it does need to respond to the WorldCom remand. And in fact, it fully intends to do so.
Stick with my question about forbearance. If you're right that one of the reasons for not acting here is the pendency of a forbearance petition, why wouldn't the possibility, the option of a forbearance petition, always be a basis for not granting a mandamus ruling?
I think it depends on the nature of the forbearance petition, and we made that argument keyed off the particular argument that Mr. Hazard made, that his forbearance petition had already been deemed granted so that these regulations had already been wiped off the book. In a normal forbearance case, there could be a further remand, there could be further developments. I don't think we would make the broader argument that you're suggesting. But, Your Honor, I would like to say that in the event that the court is not inclined to deny the petition outright, as we believe that the court should, an alternative would be to retain jurisdiction, as the court did in 2004 and 2005 when CORE filed its first mandamus petition. In light of the interim cap that was placed on the Universal Service Fund last week, the chairman of the FCC fully intends to do everything he can to respond to the WorldCom remand within 6 months. He intends to do so.
Where is that representation made?
I'm making that representation right now, Your Honor.
You aren't actually the chairman, so
I've been authorized to make the representation, Your Honor,
and to do everything he can.
That's correct.
He hasn't been completely successful in getting majority on all matters. Right.
The chairman sets the agenda for the commission. What he intends to do is achieve broad-based, comprehensive inter-carrier compensation reform within 6 months. To do everything he can to do that.
So
responding to the WorldCom remand would be part of
that. So if we issued an order granting mandamus, requiring a response within 6 months or vacation of the inter-carrier compensation rule with respect to ISPs, that would be fine with you then.
That wouldn't be fine with me. I think there's a big difference between actually issuing a writ and holding. I think what the court would deprive the chairman of some of the flexibility that he might need to get an order done.
What would deprive him of is the ability to come back in 6 months and say he needs another 6 months. That's what it would deprive him of.
Anything
else?
Yes, Your Honor. What the chairman intends to do is address this with the WorldCom remand as part of a comprehensive order on inter-carrier compensation, if possible. If it looks like that's not going to be possible within 6 months, he will peel this off and address the WorldCom remand as a standalone item within 6 months. If the other commissioners, you pointed out that the chairman is just one member of the commission, but there are ways that the chairman can force a vote. If after 6 months the other commissioners have not voted the item, what he would intend to do is schedule the item for the next regularly scheduled commission open meeting. Those have to happen once a month by statute, and commissioners have to vote on items that are put on the agenda.
This is all within the 6 month period you're talking about?
If at the end of the six-month period the other commissioners haven't voted it,
maybe more than 6 months.
Well, by a matter of weeks, the meetings have to take place once a month, Your Honor. So in light of that,
and what would happen if at the end of that time we still don't see the rationale? That is, no rationale is provided.
Well, what I'm telling you is that that order would respond to the WorldCom remand to the extent that.
What if it's voted down?
Once items are put on the agenda, they are almost never voted down. There's incredible pressure to achieve a majority support for it.
I guess there'd be more pressure if we said that it'll be vacated if there's no. It's like a deadline for a book report. My daughter always gets it in right before the deadline. So maybe we need to set a deadline here.
Well, I think that by perhaps requiring periodic status reports, that the court could achieve the same result.
We tried that approach. We didn't get anywhere.
No, you tried that approach, and after the commission advised the court that it intended to address the WorldCom remand as part of the larger proceeding involving inter-carrier compensation, the court denied mandamus based on that representation. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hazard came in after the commission told the court that, and he said he filed a supplemental petition for mandamus. He said that's not good enough. The commission shouldn't do this as part of the broader proceeding. It should do it as a standalone item. And nonetheless, the court denied mandamus. the commission still fully intends to do it as part of the broad inter-carrier compensation order if possible, but it would do it as a standalone item if necessary. And given the specific plan to get this done within 6 months or the next regularly scheduled meeting just after, there's no warrant for court intervention. In the as I said,
how did it take 6 months rather than 5 months or the next regularly scheduled meeting?
I think it just, this is a complex subject. The Wireline Competition Bureau just asked parties to refresh the record, so there has to be time for those comments to come in. This is an issue that touches all aspects of telecommunications.
Let me ask you two quick fact questions. What do you say about this subtle reference that's in the appendix, this document in docket 9968?
Right, it's just one that's been circulated to the commissioners for consideration. It does not address the WorldCom remand. It doesn't address
at all.
No, it does not address the legal authority question.
Okay. And you also said in your brief, and I think Judge Tatel mentioned it, that this is, and you said yourself just now, this is becoming less and less important because people aren't using dial-up very much, right?
Yes.
So what's the harm of forcing a decision if fewer and fewer people are using this anyway?
Because any decision that the commission makes on this would just perpetuate the patchwork of different rules.
I don't understand how it would perpetuate a patchwork of different
rules. Because what the commission intends to do, and it said that it intends to do, it said it intended to do in the 2005 further notice and has said repeatedly since then, is that it needs to replace, the current rules are based
on. How would this stop it from replacing, if what we did were to order you to do something within a set amount of time or otherwise vacate, putting you back to the previous rule? If you really want to put in a new scheme, you just put it in on top of everything. Why would this interfere?
Well, it would interfere because any legal rationale that the commission gave for whichever way it went, whether it was to justify these rules, to abandon them and agree with Mr. Hazard that reciprocal compensation should apply, could have spillover effect for other kinds of traffic. Technology has converged. There could be unanticipated consequences for anything the commission does in this area. And that's where this goes into this kind of small and diminishing point is quite relevant. What the commission intends to do, it does intend to respond to the WorldCom remand and talk about and develop rules for ISP-bound traffic, but it needs to do so, it's preferable for it to do so at the same time that it's reviewing all other rules involving inter-carrier compensation so that it can guard against unintended consequences, so it can guard against spillover effect, so it can develop a cohesive and rational system rather than perpetuating on an issue-by-issue, a traffic-by-traffic basis rules that it currently has. So in light of the statement from the Wireline Competition Bureau on Friday that the commission is going to move forward expeditiously on this, in light of the representation I made to you this morning about the chairman's plans, we would ask that the court deny the mandamus petition or in the alternative retain jurisdiction and perhaps require periodic status reports.
Thank you. Does Mr. Hazard have any time left? Mr. Hazard, you can take 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do appreciate it. A couple
of
things.
So would that type of mandamus satisfy you? 6 months?
Well, the request we asked for was 60 days,
yeah.
which we believe is reasonable.
And they
do, and I think as Judge Garland recognized from his maybe from his experience with the agency is that on the last hour and the last day is when you can expect.
But if we did what Judge Tatel just suggested, if we said 6 months or it's vacated, I appreciate six
yes.
months is not 60 days, but
then
it's a lot better than you've been doing so far.
Yes, Your Honor, that's absolutely correct. That's 100% correct, and that's basically what we've asked for. But I would just add a couple things as you think about this. One is the only companies subject to piecemeal regulation today are companies like CORE. The piecemeal regulation is the ISP remand order that has no statutory basis or no asserted statutory basis anyway. I'm sorry, Your Honor, but this goes back to the whole notion of remand versus stay that there's been a low buzz about in the court. Here we have the agency on December 27th coming forward and not saying it'll ever resolve the WorldCom remand, ever. There's not a line in it that suggests they'll do it. And they talk about global intercarrier compensation reform efforts, and we're working hard on that. And this pesky forbearance docket is really kind of making us work on things that we don't want to work on. The word universal service doesn't appear in that filing. And this order that I looked at over the weekend here, it's 110 pages with several hundred footnotes. And moreover, the chairman says he wanted to adopt this 6 months ago.
Are you looking? Mine looks a little thinner.
I guess they didn't give you the order portion to you.
I see. Okay.
And a press release from the Wireline Competition Bureau chief? I mean, is that where we are? Only to have on Monday? Oh, the chairman has these new representations for us.
Mr. Hester, your time is up.
I thank you, Your Honor, and I
thank you both.
I appreciate it.
Submit.